Palm Sunday is a strange day, isn't it? It's a strange day, even if you do it on a Sunday, which we at St. Lydia's have managed to avoid completely this year, which leads to some interesting thoughts about, you know, Palm Saturday, Palm Monday. I mean, at our dinner group, anyway, we had some really interesting conversations raising questions about what exactly we are doing. I was raised in the Episcopal Church, and I've been to many Episcopal services where basically people like march around outside of their church, you know, like I think Asa maybe has been to one of those too. And usually we're singing this hymn, All Glory, Laud, and Honor, which is not a long hymn. It's like three verses, four verses, short verses, and a refrain. And so if your march has any length to it at all, you end up singing these verses over and over and over again. And then what happens is you've got the people in the front who are like kind of, you know, moving, and they get, and then the people who kind of fall to the back, and they all get out of sync. And so the people who are up front are like singing verse three robustly. Usually they've always got the choir with them, which is kind of cheating. And then the people in the back who are like trying to catch up with the refrain, you know, and everybody's out of tune, which becomes completely apparent when you walk into the church and you hear the organ, which is playing the actual notes. And then everybody kind of tries to like catch up and join in and become one singing entity. Obviously, these processions are a reenactment of some kind, but it's also a symbolic march. And I always find myself wondering, where are we going? Our reading tonight is from Mark's Gospel. It's a very familiar passage, but as I spent time with it this week, I found myself being taken by surprise. The first surprise is how passive Jesus is in this story. I mean, if somebody asked you what Palm Sunday is about, you might say, you know, that's the day that Jesus rides into Jerusalem on a donkey, right? I mean, you know, like an answer would probably be pretty Jesus-centric. But in this passage that we just read, right up all the way to the end of that procession, here is the sum total of what Jesus does. He tells the disciples to go get this colt, and then he sits on it. That's it. Every other action in this story is performed by somebody else. The way Mark tells it, the story doesn't focus on Jesus. It focuses on everyone around him. The second surprise is how repetitive this story is. There's a ton of detail recited over and over. And I don't expect that from Mark. Mark is the shortest of the four Gospels. He is direct and succinct. He focuses on action, not on prose. I mean, I love the guy, but if I want like, you know, beautiful, beautiful prose, you know, I mean, he's no Luke. Let's just say that, okay? So what are all these like literary flourishes? The third surprise is how little time the story spends on the procession into Jerusalem itself. Of the 11 verses that we just heard, only three of them are about the palms and hosannas. What does Mr. Succinct Evangelist focus on? He spends seven verses telling us about the disciples going to get the colt. Where is Mark going with this story? To explore these questions, I want to invite you on a little exegetical journey, a procession, if you will, through the story as Mark tells it. We begin with Jesus and the disciples on a road approaching Jerusalem. Where are they exactly? Bethpage, Bethany, somewhere near the Mount of Olives, who knows? Already Mark has thrown exactitude out the window. We are in a land of symbolism, not mile markers. There's a village ahead of them, facing them in Greek, and Jesus sends a couple of disciples into it. The word for send is the root of the word apostle, with its overtones of sacred purpose. Jesus tells them that they will happen upon a colt that's tied to something. They are to untie it and bring it to him. In our English translation, we hear the words tie and untie five times. But this is no simple reference to a horse's harness. These same two words are translated elsewhere as bound and loosed. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. And whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. This is language of bondage and of liberation. As with Peter, so too with the disciples untying the colt, we are talking about the power of human beings to liberate one another and the rest of creation. The disciples go into the village, and sure enough, there's a colt. Jesus, man, it's like he's psychic. Or maybe it was just a good guess. Go into the village, there'll be a car parked on the corner. Of course there will. Should we look for a specific make and model? Try to find something new. Wait, a motorcycle. No, I want to look humble. Get me a city bike. They go into town, and sure enough, there's a colt tied near a door outside in the street. It sounds so regular, so quotidian. You would never know that this verse is the literary center of the story. The colt is not just near a door. The Greek uses an emphatic pros, toward. And that door is not merely a building entrance. It represents a moment of opportunity. Just last week, if you were here for dinner church last week, we heard Luke instruct us to knock and the door will be opened. The disciples who faced the village now face this colt, this door, and this moment of decision. Okay, so maybe you're thinking, Liz, sometimes a door is just a door, but no. Lest we fail to appreciate his metaphor, Mark hammers the point home. The colt is outside in the street, but not just any street. The Greek word is amphodou. It's an unusual word for a road or highway. In fact, this is the only time this word appears in the entire Bible. It means two or both. It suggests a convergence. Which is to say, yes, my friends, the disciples and the colt have met facing a door at a fork in the road. As the entrance to Holy Week, Palm Sunday is Jesus's Rubicon moment, if you will. From this moment on, there's no going back for him. He rides into Jerusalem, the focal point of this big protest march, surrounded by people who know what it is to be bound and who long to be free. He's going to be killed for this, and they all know it. Mark places Jesus's followers in front of that door, at that fork in the road, to communicate very clearly that it is a Rubicon moment for them, for us too. But the door that the disciples are passing through is not the same one that Jesus is about to pass through, which could be why Mark takes the focus off of Jesus and puts it on us. We know where Jesus is going. Where are we going? As I worked with this passage this week, I found my attention being drawn back again and again to the colt. Four times, Mark specifically mentions this creature. Why? The reference here is to a young animal. And it actually could be any kind of animal. Matthew, in his gospel, specifies a young donkey. So that's where we get that image. But in Mark, it could be a donkey, a horse, or a young Galapagos tortoise, for that matter. Anything that's big enough to throw a cloak on and ride. Okay, maybe not a tortoise. I suspect that Mark's point is that this is an ordinary animal, utterly unspectacular, a regular part of regular people's daily lives. When the disciples start to untie this colt, some bystanders ask them what they're doing. Jesus had anticipated this, and the disciples follow his script. The Lord needs it, they say. We have no idea who the bystanders think that Jesus is. Do they know? I mean, who the Lord is that they talk about? Who's the Lord here? Do they think it's Jesus? Do they even know Jesus? Maybe they think it's the guy who parked the colt there, or, you know, his boss. I always get this image of the disciples going all Obi-Wan Kenobi, using the Force to cloud the minds of the stormtroopers. These are not the droids you're looking for. But that's not what's happening. I think this is more like when a complete stranger turns to you in the coffee shop and asks you to watch their laptop while they go to the bathroom. And I just gotta say, I don't know about you, but I always get a little charge out of being trusted like that. Maybe these people know who Jesus is and they know what's about to go down. Or maybe this is a normal, everyday situation where people just trust each other. Either way, these randos in the street play a pivotal role in the story. Their trust makes it all possible. Maybe that's why Mark takes the spotlight off of Jesus. Christianity tends to fixate on Jesus and his risk, his suffering, his transformative saving power. Here, Mark asks us to face the power that ordinary people have to come together and seek justice. And not just people. When Jesus tells the disciples what to say to the bystanders, he assures them that he will send the colt back. That send is the same word he used to send the disciples into the town, also related to the word for apostle. The story contains a whiff of purpose for this young creature, well beyond being a dumb animal ferrying Jesus into Jerusalem. Creation itself stands at a door, at a fork in the road, living into its sacred purpose. Perhaps the knowledge of this animal's agency makes it easier for the bystanders to trust the disciples. Mark tells us that they allowed the disciples to go, using a verb that can be also translated as permit or release. The disciples who have unbound the colt are now being unbound themselves. And look at what their freedom makes possible. When the disciples get back to Jesus, they shed their cloaks, their outermost garment, the first line of defense against any external threat. They lay their cloaks on the colt to make a saddle for Jesus, and he sits. Their small group starts to move. Others join in, more bystanders who also shed their coats and throw them on the road to create a path for Jesus and the colt. Folks are walking, marching, singing, dancing, and suddenly this growing protest begins to feel like a party. Where are they going? Some throw palm branches onto the road, a sign of deference to royalty. Imagine this royalty, guy on a borrowed donkey covered in people's coats. That they see a king in him should be the biggest surprise of all. But remember, the story isn't about Jesus. It's about a crazy mix of people, disciples and bystanders caught up in hope that life can be better than it is. Truer, fairer, more just. Where are they going? I'm not sure they even know. All they know is that this is a road they need to be on. This is a door they have to walk through. It's no surprise that churches don't quite know what to do with Palm Sunday. As liturgical days go, it stands completely apart from anything else we do all year. I think what Mark may be trying to tell us is that, strange as this day is, the strangest thing about it is how regular it is. This is a story about people finding each other in random encounters in church, at work, walking down the street, making everyday decisions to take risks from which there will be no going back, to trust, to set free that which is bound. Palm Sunday represents a fork in the road that faces us every single day. The question is not, will Jesus take the fork to risk, to trust, to unbind? The question is, will we? Amen.